From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com.
Could you pick that up?
Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week, my guest is Lee Roos, one half of the breakbeat pioneers, the Plump DJs. Along with Andy Gardner, Lee Roos has been making house and break music from the UK and around the globe for more than a decade. They just wrapped up a big US tour, got a major house slot at Fabric in London, and signed to Grand Hotel Records. Let's get to the interview.
You were classically trained on guitar as a child, and also you began to dabble in keys, or was that later on?
Yeah, well, I've started. Sort of played around with old sort of kids' keyboards when I was younger, but then since Andy and I have been working together for about 12 years now, I've managed to sort of further that part of my repertoire, as it were, and he had a nice chance to play keys on various tracks that we've made.
Do you think that your classical training has maybe bolstered your ability to compose both beats and melodies and all those things?
Well, I think just learning an instrument when you're young really helps. You know, really gives you an ear for music, and you can apply the same sort of process to various different instruments. So, you know, once you've learned one, it's quite a sort of broadening process.
Now, you had the advantage of growing up around a pivotal era. Do you remember the first electronic music you were exposed to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I actually at the time thought of it as electronic music. I think, you know, we were listening to drum machines and synthesizers in the sort of, you know, late 70s, early 80s with some of the disco records that were going on. And then through the 80s pop era as well. I think Andy and I have got a very similar musical background in that we were the same, similar age, just by a couple of years different. And we both our parents sort of like their rock and Motown and soul. So we've got that as a sort of roots.
Sure.
Thing. And then, you know, both growing up in the 80s pop era as teenagers and moving into hip hop when it broke through, and then on to indie when the two of us went to different universities, and then both discovering dance music and fell in love with house music in the early 90s and then moved on to breakbeat from there. So I think that really fuses the two of us in terms of our outlook on music generally.
When did you decide to begin spinning yourself, and what were those early years like? What was on your tables?
Well, there's a guy that used to be local, a mate of mine. He's a hip-hop scratch DJ. He used to go in his garage in his house where his parents lived, and we used to hang out there, and he used to play records, and I used to be just so fascinated with his skills and stuff, and his name's Chris, and you know, he really sort of taught me some basics about turntablism and hip-hop, and then I met Matt Cantor from the Freestylers at university, and Matt taught me how to sort of DJ, you know, in more sort of modern mixing house sort of music, really, and yeah, moved on from there, really, started promoting my own night in London and booking myself as a warm-up act, and actually booking people like Andy, who's my musical partner now, and the Freestylers, and Touche, and Adam Freeland, and all these sort of people back in the day, and that's how I sort of moved into what I'm doing now.
Light Fantastic from the Plump DJs right here on the Unce Podcast.
You began working with Andy Gardner, meshing your styles and all that. Were you and your contemporaries actively aware that you were breaking new ground with your breakbeat sound in the late 90s? Or were you so engrossed in the scene that you just wanted to make music that you thought was cool and would get people on the dance floor?
It's a bit of both, really, I suppose. We'd been partying, as I mentioned, and going out and raving, listening to house music, and the house scene had become increasingly glam and we became a little bit, we became a little bit sort of disenchanted with, you know, creatively, the environment not inspired by the music that was coming out, and everything just got a little bit OTT and really lost its balls for us. And I think that our sort of, then the big beat thing sort of started blowing up. Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, Prodigy, moving forward with their sort of rave sound, or unique sound. And we just seemed that, it just seemed that all the breakbeat tunes, or tunes of breaks in that we were listening to when we were out, they just seemed to get, you know, just really set us on fire. So we started, you know, I started doing this breaks night in London, and I think there's a few people at the same time all over the country and all over the world just experimenting with this sort of sound that was moving forward. And yeah, well, I don't think we, it wasn't too much of a conscious decision. We didn't sort of sit up at night thinking, you know, making a big plan to make, you know, specific sound. It's just that that was what was turning us on, and that's what we experimented with. And we didn't even think we'd get anywhere with it. And I'm still completely shocked that we still are now. So but we're still doing the same thing. I mean, basically, Annie and I are still in the studio, you know, trying to push the envelope and trying to experiment. And it's the same process going on now as it was, you know, 12 years ago. So it's just that our sound's changed a lot.
Your 2003 album, Eargasm, featured a guest spot from Gary Newman of Vanguard in his own right in synth-pop and electronic music. That must have been a thrill to get to work with him.
Yeah, it was a sort of childhood, more than a dream, really. Just never, ever, ever thought in a million years when I was watching him on telly when I was younger, you know, the scary sort of pale-faced, you know, electro-pop star.
Sure.
That I'd ever be speaking to him on the phone like we are now, and then actually making a track with a guy. But in hindsight, our naivety, you know, led to a little bit of frustration. We were just so excited to speak to him, and so excited for him to get some vocals and some ideas over to us. And we really, I think we could have done a better job on what we did. But, you know, we were just so excited, you know, back then. We just didn't know where to start, to be honest. And we've never really been heavily managed. We've always sort of tried to, you know, find our own path. And I think we could have done with a bit of management by then.
Well, at the same time, you know, your music's been awfully successful, and you've won a few awards in your day. Beatport's Best Breakbeat Artist in 2008, and again this year. Do the accolades affect what kind of music you set out to make? Do you feel like you need to continue making the kind of tunes that are garnering people's attentions, or do you still have that, you know, independent streak saying, you know, whatever we feel we need to be doing, not pressured by you know, the media looking at you, or your fans expecting something of you?
It's hard to ignore what people perceive you to be, especially when you're sort of making, you know, new music. You don't, you know, you sort of, it's hard to ignore that thought of what you represent to people. But, you know, Andy and I were talking about this over dinner tonight, actually. You know, the two of us have had the technology and ability to make any music we've wanted, you know, be it pop or, you know, anything you can think of, we can do. But we've always chosen the sort of tough path and the, you know, the harder, more experimental path, really. And it's that's what turns us on, you know. So yeah, I think that we're not happy when we do anything else but that. You know, if we ever make a tune and we start to sort of think commercially about it, or think about the money, or we just never make good music. Andy and I are much better when we're just trying to do something that no one else has done, and trying to get excited about something new and experiment. That's when we make our best music. So that sort of construction process is preordained almost. It's like we're not gonna make good music any other way. So this is our path, sort of thing.
Pray For You featuring Gary Newman from the Plump DJs album Eargasm.
Are there recent trends in electronic music that have seeped into your sound, or are you trying to always, you know, be ahead of the curve, as it were?
Yeah, you get, I mean, we got really quite influenced by the sort of Dutch house sound more recently, stuff by Afrojack and a Kolder Rock track as well, which is not really of that ilk, but there's a number of, and some of the sounds coming out of the dubstep scene and some of the inventiveness within that scene, incredibly inspiring. So, you know, you absorb all of that and then you try and sort of put your own take on it, really.
I wonder about putting your own take on things. You've got a couple of big remixes in the bag of relative newcomers like dead mouse. What do you set to accomplish when you're tasked with a remix? How do you go about establishing your signature sound, putting your thumbprint on it?
Yeah, it's just really your take. I mean, the motivation for doing a remix varies massively. I mean, obviously for remixes you can financially get, you know, basically get paid. So sometimes remixes come through in a sort of as a bit of a sort of, you know, they come across like work in mm-hmm. some ways.
Yeah.
But motivation always for us is, you know, is creative first and foremost. It's like if we like a record and we think we can add our take to it or translate it or maybe listening to the record spurns an idea that we'd like to get down, then we'll do the remix, you know. So we never do remixes that we're not feeling just for the money, and we respect the artist involved as well. You know, you've really got to bring something to the table and do good, as it were.
And I wonder, what's the creative process like when you're working with a partner? How do you divide up the workload? How do you decide who will tackle what part of a song, either if it's an original composition or if you are doing a remix?
Yeah, it's well, I mean, both of us have like different roles in the studio environment. Andy's much more hands-on with the equipment. I'm much more sort of, I take a bit more of an overview on things and tend to look at the bigger picture a bit more. And both of us get involved in the creative process. Well, we're both involved 24/7 in the same environment. You know, it's just the two of us in the same studio. We don't work from different studios or anything. Mm-hmm. But it just depends where the inspiration comes from. You know, Andy could come up with an idea while we're on tour, or I could come up with an idea in London, or find a sample that I'd really like to work with, or we both come talk about an artist that's inspired us in the past, and we'll come up with an idea for a track together. It's quite an organic thing from the outset, and then the rest of it's just experimentation. You know, getting some beats down and. Just throwing lots of ideas in the pot and seeing what sticks. And there's a lot of tunes we make that don't ever see the light of day, and a lot of tunes that we go back to and back to and back to, and they never come off. And then the odd one that just happens sort of like overnight. It's quite an exciting thing to be involved in, especially when you know you've got a good record in on your hands, and the sort of excitement when you take that out on the road.
Punkrala remix of the Plump DJ's Boomer. Let's wrap up my interview with Lee Roos.
And live, are you two still working with two decks apiece, or have you just added globs and globs of gear on top of your setup from the 90s back in the clubs in the UK?
Yeah, we used to just have two decks and just play records and play like three tunes each, but we did this big show in Sydney like a couple of years ago, and a friend of ours was videoing it and just said, look guys, you've got a platform here, you know, you should be doing much more than you are. And our friend couldn't actually believe that we got that far just by one of us sitting there smoking cigarettes and drinking beer and the other one playing tunes and then swapping around. And I felt a bit bad actually. I felt really complacent. And we worked out this four deck setup, and we've got this guy who makes this box called a Q2, which allows us both to use the same mixer, so we can be really hands-on. We can listen to what each other's doing and get really creative. And the show's really, really progressed in the last 2 years. I mean, sort of we've developed some sort of telepathy now and really worked amazingly well as a duo. And you know, I'm really, really happy with that show now. I think we turn up at a venue now and I really feel like we've got something really unique beyond just the fact that we make, you know, music that has a certain sound. We put on a good show too.
And Obviously, the reaction on this latest U.S. and Canadian tour has been amazing. Last night in San Francisco sold out. As we record tonight, Seattle sold out. I mean, they're loving you out there.
Yeah, it's great. It's a shame that, you know, it's a bit of a shame that we have to do midweek gigs, really. But, you know, when you've got these weekends that are just packed out clubs and really, really cool, and then you sort of drop down to the midweek events, you know, your energy's low and there's less people out because it's not the weekend, and it's a little bit frustrating, but it's just so nice to be able to fly the flag and just get out to these, you know, far-reaching places, and you turn up and people have got your records and or know your music, and it's a wonderful experience, really is, especially like Seattle tonight. You know, we came out, as I said, some time ago, but a year ago maybe, and played on a midweek, and the support was really good and real good energy, and now we're back, and it's, you know, looking like it's going to be a full club, and we, you know, it's a growing process.
Absolutely. And now you've got a few more dates in Australia and the UK, a few club dates. What's the difference in crowds? Are there different expectations when you're maybe here in the US and Canada versus back in the UK and then Australia?
Yeah, I mean, the crowds vary massively throughout the world. But the big thing for us in the States is that we've not been able to come out for like 10 years or so. And what's happened is a lot of our compadres and people that have supported our music have come out here playing our tunes or breaks stuff. And we've had fans out in America, you know, have been listening to our music for ages and not been able to hear us play. So when we come out now, there's a, you know, bearing in mind we've been producing all the, for the last 10 or 12 years in the UK, there's a big cross section of fans, you know, from young to old, and they all want something completely different. And we're finding just to try and make everyone happy is a real, real tough call, because the older tunes don't really drop as well as they should do, because they're, you know, the sensibilities in them are, you know, are old.
Sure.
And the, you know, the youngsters get the new stuff but not the old stuff, and the older fans get the old stuff but not the new stuff, so it's an interesting game of cat and mouse, but we're getting some really good results now. So
that's great. And you've signed to a new label, Grand Hotel. Is yep. there a new project in the works after you're done? You're touring through December and January in the UK and Australia. Are you going back into the studio after that?
Yeah, very, very busy when we get back to England in the next couple of weeks, and then off to Asia. We've got two gigs, Singapore, Bangkok, and then we've got the 6-day Australian tour, and we've also, looks like we're going to be going out to Dubai before we go to Asia. But the last year and a half, 2 years has been, you know, sort of finishing a successful period with Finger Licking and with Fabric as well, Fabric Nightclub, and we've basically found a new home in London, XOYO, which is this club over in Old Street, that we're doing our sort of Grand Hotel Records party on the 12th of February, and we're, you know, setting up the label and finding a new home for us in London. It's been a lot of work, but it's really coming together really well, so that's been, you know, our major focus for this year. But we're going live on two sites, the new Plump DJs website and the Grand Hotel Records site, and we're getting loads of really cool acts involved with Grand Hotel now, people from like Human Life, Punk Roller, Will Bailey, AC Slater, all putting forward mixes, doing remix work and coming out and DJing at the Grand Hotel nights up and down the country. So it's looking really good. Real, you know, we've created a really nice platform for ourselves now.
That's so good to hear. Lee Roos, thanks so much for being on the Uns podcast.
Oh, it's really nice to talk to you, and welcome anytime.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's Uns podcast. Thanks goes to Melissa McTavish with Pressure Media, and of course, my guest, Lee Roos. Visit theuns.com to catch up on dates and locations for the Plump DJs World Tour and find out about their next big release on Grand Hotel. The Uns Challenge has finally come to an end. Congratulations to Disco Netter and Raka from Bulgaria for taking the top spot in the competition with their track Krakatoa. Dirty Ganesh came in second place. They both walk away with big prizes from Ableton and Novation. Stay tuned for more contest announcements and the release of the free Uns Challenge sampler featuring tracks from the finalists. Next week on the Uns podcast, minimal dub and grime DJ Super Dre will be featured on the program. Her new single drops in early December, and she'll be joining Bass Nectar and Anasia in Atlanta for some New Year's Eve festivities. Remember to visit theuns.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Uns podcast, contact me at anand@theuns.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theuns.com.